Hello and welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is someone who just finished ghostwriting the 75th book in a Waverly Prep series. It's Nadia Boetes.
Ah, I wish. Goodbye, financial troubles. That would be amazing.
75 books.
75 books! I've like read about people who write that many books. I mean, listen, if you like watch the movie and like you see the type of young adults, I guess it could be done still though. 75. I'm gonna need a lot of Star Wars alcohol, definitely.
Star Wars. Definitely. You know what I love too? In the commentary, Jason Reitman was talking about how he wanted to have Patton Oswalt doing something as like unquote unquote as masculine as possible. So when we see him, he's working as a cooper on those barrels, and he's, you know, charring the insides, looking like a complete boss. And then he makes all this whiskey. Then we see his toy collection. Or, you know, it just, I love it. I love the kind of the way that his character is. And I love the way that Reitman framed him. And I'm so happy we're talking about this, Zanotti, because I got to tell you, I watched this movie in 2011 and it felt, I had no idea where it was going. I don't think I've ever seen a character like Mavis Gerry on screen before. Mm. I love Diablo Cody's writing. I don't care if I annoy people. It didn't feel like a dude wrote it, which makes me so happy to watch. Totally. And it's just, I think it is my favorite Charlize Theron role because she's not hiding. And she earned her Oscar for Monster, but like she's not hiding behind weight gain and makeup. She's not hiding behind, you know, one arm and a shaved head. This is just Charlize Theron on screen. And, you know, not disguises, but she changes up her dress look a lot in this movie. But it's just her on screen holding it. And I think it's my favorite performance of hers by far.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I also think this is her best work that I've like seen. Yeah, like Monster obviously was good and whatever, but I don't know. This character is just next level. And yeah, I also love that. For me, it was also like, you never get to see characters like this. I think Diablo Cody created such a great character and Charlize just nailed it. Like she took it that like 3-4 steps further, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, she just made it pop. It was like refreshing to see, you know, especially back then, we didn't get to see like women being all drunk and doing everything wrong on screen. Like that is no, like we had such stereotypical roles for women, especially back then still. So yeah, it was just like so cool to see her. And like you say, not hiding behind, like looking differently like she did in Monster, for instance. No, it was beautiful Charlize, like with her beauty and everything, but kind of like they worked on that. Like the makeup became grotesque. Mm-hmm. And almost like oily, like she's sweating. Like, I don't know. The makeup was really, really well done. There were scenes where I was just like, oh, you guys nailed it. Like, you know, where she's plastering herself to go see her like high school boyfriend, like the guy she's now there to steal.
Charlize did a lot of her own makeup. Yeah, it's crazy. Like, she did a lot of her own makeup. Sorry to interrupt, but it was kind of cool.
Excellent.
Like, yeah, she loved this character, and it made me so happy to know that. And also, too, I love. We're going to the ending here, and you're talking about going and breaking up a happy marriage. But I really like Elizabeth Reeser and Patrick Wilson in this movie.
Elizabeth Reeser in general. I love her. She was my favorite in Haunting of Hill House. Oh, I love her so much. And she's great in this. She's so nice. She's like so nice.
She regrets inviting Mavis
she's
over.
She's the opposite of Mavis.
Yeah, she teaches special needs students. She's in a band. She drinks beer. They really wanted. I like how they definitely wanted to create this cool presence. And normally in movies, there's always like a Baxter, right? You're Bill Pullman in Sleepless in Seattle, your Carrie Ells in Liar Liar. But in this one, you know, Buddy did not have a Baxter. He had like an awesome Beth. So, but the ending too, where you're like, okay, she's going back into town. She's going to get this guy. It's going to cause problems for him. He's going to sleep on the couch. He's going to be miserable. But after that scene where they kiss outside their house, he went and told his wife, presumably, And then she's like, hey, she's not right. Let's see if she's okay. And then he told her, and they were on the same page. And it was just so refreshing that he talked to her. And they, and he didn't want to run away with Mavis at the end. He was kind of scared of her. And I thought, I had never seen that on screen ever. And it was just, I remember just being blown away. I think that scene blew me more away than any explosion in any Michael Bay movie. Like, it's just, which I've counted all of them, by the way, just letting you know. And it's, I don't know, a 90-minute movie, so refreshing, good story. And the ending, oh my gosh, with Patton Oswalt and Colette Wolfe as Sandra, just telling her how awesome she is. Like, she went back to them, right, Zanandi, to, like, feel better.
So good.
Did she go back to them to feel better? Or did she told them, I am not okay. And they just ignored her, and they're like, no, you're beautiful and you're fine. Did she go back fishing to, like, get the attention, to, like, get her power scores back up so she could go back to Minneapolis? Like, why did she go back there at the end?
I guess because this was the only people that really, like, Matt specifically really, like, saw her. Like, I love the scene in the bar. So the bar scene, I think, is one of the best scenes, and I think it's highly underrated because for a lot of people, it looks like just the scene where, yeah, okay, the band's playing and Mavis is trying her best with Buddy, but Buddy only has eyes for his wife, Beth, playing the drums, like, killer. But there's so much going on there. And where, like, Mavis realizes, yo, Buddy really, like, he's into his wife, this guy, but she doesn't want to believe it. Like, you can see herself jinx it. Like, she's jinxing it. She's like, no. Like, she sees it, and then it's like, no, that's not what's happening. Like, Charlize does it so well. And then she spots Matt looking at her. And that moment is so good. It's so good, because she sees him seeing her. And I think that's why she goes back, because he's really the only one that sees her. And, like, you know, because she can't talk to her parents. Shame. I mean, they look like very nice people, but also, wow, they're oblivious. She straight up tells him, I think I'm an alcoholic. And mom's like,
yeah.
What? I mean, yes, your daughter is an alcoholic. Help her. She's literally sitting here. Like, anyway. Yeah, I mean, she goes back to Matt because, yeah, he gives her the time of day. He gives her the space because he sees her. So I think it's a little bit of both. She doesn't have anywhere else to go. But at the same time, yeah, she'll definitely, I think she knows she'll get at least some acceptance there, which is sad because that's just what everyone wants. Whether you're a narcissist or not, like, everyone just wants a little bit of acceptance, you know?
Yeah.
The character, right. And that's also what I love. Like, a character is so complex because she's a full on narcissist. I love how in the end, you know, the ending, it's cynical. It's not like this happy, happy Hollywood ending. She's changed now. I mean, no, because that's not how it works anyway. She's still, like, got a long way to go. I love that it's not completely hopeless though. You know, like when Matt tells her, but you weren't better then and you're not better now. It kind of implies that you haven't actually peaked yet. You think you have, but you haven't. Like, that's that little bit of hope that he leaves. And, like, you still have a life ahead of you. You just need to seriously let go of the way you think things need to go, which is just good. General life lessons, kids.
And getting away from Waverly Prep is going to be good for her as well, because absolutely. Kendall is, she's just writing about Kendall. She's living fan fiction through Kendall.
Exactly. Totally stuck in that adolescence. Yeah.
And I love her, you know, when she goes out to the bar for her first date with the guy, we never see his face, but he starts talking about how he did a trip, what he was in overseas. And she's like, yeah, that sounds terrible. He's like, no, it's the most fulfilling thing in my life. And she's like, oh, that's awesome. She's just no interest in him. She disagreed with whatever he said. And I don't know. I just love, I'm telling you this, like, I feel her performance. I sent you a message and it sort of exudes unhealthy to me. And what I mean is that there's just, whether it's depression, narcissistic, you know, she's absolutely a narcissist, or like just chronic depression, whatever it is, like, they never fully explain in this movie. And you know what's interesting too? Reitman took out a lot of her drinking in this movie. There's a lot more of her drinking, but he didn't want people to solely attribute her behavior to being an alcoholic. Diablo Cody said that she wrote Juno, she wrote Jennifer's Body about kids. So then she wrote about, you know, she was writing an update of a kid's book, and there are all these pseudonyms who are ghostwriters who are writing for this main author. And she's like, I want to know who this person is. And then I guess she saw an article about someone who went back home to get this person, and she just combined it into Mavis Gary. And it's, oh no, I love it. I know I keep saying this. I don't care. This movie is so refreshing because I can't think of another single character like this, because she's not a, yes. She, okay. What's the right word? I don't think she's a monster. I think something is just like she has something undiagnosed or something that is unmedicated. Yeah, exactly.
She needs to listen to Matt, who's her best friend in her life, apparently. I also actually, on that note, Vicky in the beginning. Vicky, I love Vicky. She's got a scene, the friend, she's got a scene there in the beginning where you can see, like, Charlize is, like, showing her the baby pic and, like, having her all arguments of, no, but, you know, why would he send this to me? And he's obviously not happy. How can you be happy? I can't remember the exact words it's spoken, but you can see Vicky is just like, she's trying to figure out what is the right thing that Mavis wants to hear now. What is she supposed to say? Like, she's not like responding in an authentic way and her own thoughts. You can see she's like, what would Mavis want to hear now? That's her best friend back home. So like, yeah, arguably Matt is, you know, the best one to help her out in this situation. And I love, I think Peyton also did a great job playing. It was really, like, toned down, I think, his performance. I loved it. I did read somewhere he was like, yeah, he got, like, acting coaching and also how to, like, play this person that got bashed when he was, like, younger and now, like, you know, has, like, some body stuff happening. And I just thought, yeah, it was cool seeing him in a role like that. I liked it.
Yeah, Vicky, she just kind of gets steamrolled, or she's so tired of dealing with Mavis that she just agrees. She does not care. She's like, yeah, our life is awesome.
Yeah, it's like, it's not really that friend that's going to tell you, no, you don't do that. Like,
I mean, this is
just there. Yeah.
This is a woman who saw an email of a baby and then became obsessed with the fact that they sent that as like a cry for help and she had to go break up their relationship. That's
the imagination and the hoops you have to jump through to get to that point. Yeah.
Some mental gymnastics, okay, for sure.
She should listen to Matt and, like, help is needed. But, yeah, I do love it that, you know, it's not just like, okay, she's just a narcissist or she just has chronic depression or, like, she clearly is struggling to get over her divorce. Because I love it that there's, like, these little things from her background that gets dropped and you're like, oh, right, she's been through a divorce, that could mess you up. Oh, she's had at the end you find out she had a miscarriage with this guy, that can like take a toll on a woman. So yeah, like she's got a lot of that going, and then like with the like obsessive compulsive thing, and it's a complex character, and it works. It's not too much either. You know, it's, I think it can sound like it might be too much, but it's not. It just works. Like she's a complicated. And then, yeah, she was Miss Quain in high school, but girl can write. She's a ghostwriter.
Yeah, she's like, a beast. You know, she turns out popular novels.
She's got brains. She can write. It might not be like Hemingway, but she can write. So, yeah, she's such an interesting character. And you're right. I mean, that's why I loved the movie when I first saw it. It was, Juno was fine and okay for me. And that was also the other thing, like, I read Cody was like, yeah, people kept asking her, so why, you know, like, why are you obsessed with, like, doing, like, you know, kids stuff and kids movies? And it's like kind of, well, okay, do an adult thing now, but where in Juno is like, you know, the young ones talking like 30-year-olds now is like a 30-year-old talking like a young teenager. I love that little swing around.
Mom, get my back here.
It's fun. It's a great movie. And just, yeah, it's my favorite Charlize performance. It's by far. She's just, you can't take your eyes off of her. Like every moment, she plays it so well.
And like, you know, I love, they don't explain the divorce, right? So that, I love that. They don't explain really why they broke up, Buddy and Mavis. I know she had the miscarriage. But that's all they say.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. So it just leaves it up to your imagination. You don't know how much of an alcoholic she is. You don't know, you see enough of her, OCD tendencies with her hair and she has some tics and you see enough of that. And I love it too, because some movies I think are so on the nose with their explanations of characters that this one gives you enough to ask the good questions in this. So like this does enough to create, I think, a three-dimensional character because, sure, I mean, listen, the way that she creeps out that woman in the Macy's is just, oh, man, she oozes sort of unhealthy. And then the way that, for a single mom, you have a lot of confidence. I mean, she's an absolute beast in some regards, but then you can see what things led to that point. And I just, I don't know, I love it. And yeah, I guess I just haven't seen, when I saw this, I was quite naive about the like process of getting ready. So watching her go to the salon, do all the makeup, get the dress, get like everything else. I was very naive to that process. And I thought that was really cool of Charlize because I don't know. And no one even talked about that too in regards to this movie. They were like, when they talk about sometimes an actor's getting like, what was it like unprettied for movies? Like, oh, you got prettied down, but like, they didn't do that here. They just showed how like the process of going into making her look like Charlize and the, like I was completely naive to that process. So watching, I'm like, this is really cool. Cause I don't think I've ever seen that on screen before. You've never seen the time that people take to get ready like that. So I was like, I don't know. I kind of
doesn't it look exhausting?
Yeah.
I find it exhausting just looking at it.
And I have a question too. So you and I we write. We've been writing for years. We churn out a lot of content. When's your writing window? Because I was watching Mavis. She goes and drinks whiskey. She drinks a lot of Maker's Mark. They had Maker's Mark in Juneau too. And then she goes and houses some Kentucky Hut, so Kentucky Fried Chicken Taco Hut and Pizza Hut. There was a song when
is
I worked
that
at
a real thing?
Yeah, it was.
Have that.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting? When I was in college, there's a song that I haven't been able to find since, but it's like, I'm going to the Taco Bell. I'm going to the combination Pizza Hut and Taco Bell. Like, there's a whole EDM song to that, and it played in my bar all the time, and I haven't listened to it since, but it's burnt into my memory. But those are real things. And just,
whoa.
I don't know. And even the scene where they show her eating, but it's just her back. I'm like, this is good back acting by Theron. She crushed it. But,
she's that good.
I mean, it's just, I don't know. And, but yeah, you're right in window.
Acting.
Like, oh, yeah.
Acting.
Great toe.
Is that her feet, though? I wonder, is it her feet? Good toe acting.
No, I think it was because Reitman said that when he went with them, so he's like, Charlize, it's in the script. Because Diablo Cody had just had a kid, so she only showed up to set once. But she said Reitman is awesome to work with, and she could have been there the whole time if she wanted. And he's just open to whatever. It's because they have a great working relationship. But he looked at Charlize, and he looked at the makeup department, and he's like, listen, how do y'all do this? So then he just listened to them, and then they went and filmed that. And so I really do think that – because they only shot this over 30 days. Which,
yeah, 12 mil budget, 30 days. Yeah. I'm also thinking, like, also Charlize is pretty hands-on. She's not like, so yeah. Yeah, no, I think hands-on.
I think a 30-day shoot,
right? I think
it was
her hands and feet. Yeah, totally, probably.
Great toe acting. But like, when's your writing window? Because she writes when she's drunk. She writes after eating. She writes in the morning. She writes on a bus. She's never on a bus, but she writes on a bench. Like, what's your writing window? Do you have one?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's changed over the years, but yeah, like I can't do it as frenetically as she does here. But I mean, it's because she drinks. That's why, though. I remember when I was in my 20s and drinking in my 20s, because I used to drink. don't do it, kids. like, I mean, that was also, my schedule was way more scattered. So that was another thing. Like, again, seeing someone like her on screen, you never get to see someone like that. Like we love to talk about how relatable characters are and whatnot. Like that for me was relatable. Like having this crazy, like, schedule and being hung over and having to write. Yeah, I did that back in the day. Would not recommend. Yeah. Don't do it, kids. But yeah, I mean, gosh, she wrote how many books? That's something. But that's also the thing. We don't know how long she's been drinking. Has she always been drinking? Did she start drinking when she got a divorce? Did she get divorced because the husband couldn't deal with the drinking? There's a lot of questions about her backstory. And I like that because I think, sorry, I just want to like say, I think it works because it makes her interesting and intriguing. Because I think like a lot of people will just like start watching the movie and be so turned off by this narcissistic, horrible, mean girl. Like not everyone likes watching Mean Girls. I know I struggle. Like it's too much for me. It actually triggers like the bullies from school back in the day. With her though, like because she's so complex and because there are like stuff left out, I'm like, whoa, ooh, what's going on here? I think it like just makes her all the more intriguing to not have this, she started drinking then and that's why she got divorced and blah, 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 you know? Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, it's actually a great little trick, I think, a writing trick. How to, you know, keep a character intriguing enough for people that might, like, it might put them off too much or, like, be too much of a, no, I don't like this. I can't root for someone like this, or I don't care. It's not really, like, necessarily about rooting. It's just, like, about caring to see what happens to this character. Which is why I like the fact that it doesn't have this happy ending and she's all changed and better and she's in therapy now. And no, I don't think Mavis, I don't know if she's ever going to go to therapy, honestly.
She's got a journey ahead of her.
She's going to eat Bray Lovitz, I think.
I feel bad for any therapist she actually goes to. And, you know, on her apartment complex, I did remember she lives in a condo in the Minneapolis, but it says now leasing or now renting. So I wonder if that was a newer place that she just moved into after the divorce and that became her pad.
Ah, nice. Well spotted. That's
kind of maybe. So it seems like she, but you know what I love about her is when she's in that hotel room for 3 days, it becomes horrible to be in. Reitman said there's three stages of it.
Absolutely.
And he said he didn't even go in there during the third time. He just sat outside because it depressed him too much. And then also the dog, they picked a Pomeranian because he's like, I just wanted her to basically have a dog that was a hostage. And anytime that the dog saw, like anytime, I guess in general, if a Pomeranian sees you, they're happy. So she just absolutely imprisons this poor dog. But whenever it sees her, it's happy. And it's, every little decision I just really dig about that. But yeah, I felt really bad for the dog, though. I felt for the poor.
Same. It was hard to watch, but a great choice in the sense of, you know, she can't even take care of a dog. Like, that's the terrible, terrible state she's in. I mean, that is one thing that they do in the end, is they do show her going back and,
yes,
she shows remorse. She does. She hugs that pup and she's like, I'm so sorry. She knows she's done wrong with her dog. So that's like again, you know, she she feels better because Matt's sister told her how amazing she is. And she's like, you're right. I am amazing and better than this town. so like she leaves as her terrible self. But then she does tell her dog, I'm so, so sorry. I know I've done wrong. again, so complex. Like, it's, you know, not just all good or all bad. It's like this mixed bag, and I just love it because there's just a lot to dig in. You know, you always talk about, I remember like back in the day when I was doing acting, like you want characters with meat on it. And if there's not enough meat, you put meat on it, you know, like that's your job. And I think Cody writes a great character, and I think Charlize was the perfect person to put the meat on, because yeah, you just want to dig into Mavis Gary. Like 10 years later, where's Mavis? Where do you think Mavis is?
Oof, still doing well somewhere and still not being listened to.
And still being terrible to anyone she doesn't really care for.
But I like it though, how whenever she tries to explain herself to people, they just don't listen to her.
It's sad.
The way she presents herself though, and the way that she taught, like, oh, I'm doing awesome. So then when she says something, people, like, they don't. So it's, I feel like if she even tries to open up to most people, they wouldn't listen to her. Like, she tried. Mm-hmm. I think she tried a little bit with Sandra, where she said, I'm not right. I don't feel happy. Other people can be happy, but I can't. And Sandra's like, no, you're just the best. That's why. And it's like, I think she was trying to have a genuine moment of compassion there. And then I like how Sandra basically says, you're the best. But then she's like, take me with you. And Mavis is like, no. So she tries to open up to her. Then Sandra just, here. Yeah, you're good here. They almost cut it right there. I was like, oh my gosh.
Terrible line.
But yeah, I mean, she tried to open up, and then Sandra just sort of became like everybody else, and then she just immediately disregarded her after that. I thought that was really interesting. Also, I thought it was kind of cool that, you know, most movies involve people going to small towns, and the small towns are uncultured, or, you know, no one's doing anything, or, you know, they're just miserable there. But I feel like it's Mavis invading this nice town. And yes, there are problems there. There are issues. But I do love, though, that, I mean, she came there and threw a monkey wrench in their lives, which aren't terrible. And I like that. I felt like the kind of the heartland of, you know, because outside of Minnesota, I have a lot of family that lives in Iowa, Minnesota. It's very farmlandy. There's a lot of lakes. There's a lot of lakes. Like she said, it was like a lake town. And so like a hick town, hick lake town. But I kind of dug how they showed some respect, at least what I considered respect, comparatively to what most movies would show to a rural town where these people are happy. This isn't just like, hey, now, I don't know why they'd be speaking like that in Minnesota in the north, but I like that she invades it. It just makes me happy. Everyone's pretty chill in this town, and a good crowd shows up for nipple confusion. And, I mean, I'm sure news still gets around to everybody. But, I mean, there's a big mall close by. So, it's not really that small. They got
They're getting a Chipotle.
So, it's not small. So, it's interesting that she's calling it a hick town. I mean, I guess if you know, Minneapolis, St. Paul, it's a big city. I mean, there's a lot there. But she's not really going to the area in Texas Chainsaw Massacre where her town used to be. I mean, seems like a pretty big city. But, I keep repeating myself. With Jeff Nichols, you know, he did Take Shelter in a mud. I feel like he has a respect for the Midwest and the South. And I also feel like they had this for the North, too. Like, they didn't try to go Drop Dead Gorgeous, which I love, on the town. But it's another reason I like Diablo Cody. She sort of respects that area. And that's another just refreshing thing for me. I mean, this movie, I keep saying it, but this is one of the most... it goes by so fast. It's like, she doesn't say much for the first 8 minutes. It's largely just her chugging 2-liter cola, which I love, is a good touch. And then driving to town and listening to the same song over and over. There's a lot there. I felt bad for Diablo Cody, too, because people kept like watching this movie. And I think she wrote a brilliant film. And they're like, oh, you didn't have characters saying like, hey, I'm the Scooby-Doo. I don't know. That's a horrible example. But Juno, you know how stylized the dialogue is in Jennifer's body and Juno?
It's not like that here.
And people kept kind of giving her crap for it. Like, this where'd the dialogue go? And she's like, I'm growing up.
It's
like,
natural. Yeah.
And I don't know. I thought that was a good departure. And I don't think it was her going serious either. I don't know. I love it. I keep saying it. I don't care. I dig it. I think Reitman, I think he seemed to really trust the material too. which I appreciated. He just sort of trusts her words, and he went out to make it. And, you know, thank goodness that Mad Max Fury Road was delayed, because she was in Australia getting ready to make it. It got canceled, then she came back and made this.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, imagine. Like,
young
it's hard to see anyone else actually.
Yeah, who could do it? Could anybody else do this? Because you need to have layer of... I like that you have this layer of instability there, like mental... I can't think of a better word, but you have this aura of depression or untreated mental illness, but then it's not over
the top.
But also
a command.
Yeah.
Like, she also has this Meryl Streep power. Like, when she's like, you know, when she's going to be mean to you, she's going to turn you into dust. Like, she's got this power. She's got this authority. Like, she's all over the place, and she can be ditzy and she can be a lot of things, but she commands it. Like, whatever she does,
that's
why she
there.
Gets away with a lot of stuff that she says, you know, because no one takes her on because they're freaking scared of her.
Yeah, that would be brutal.
Got it. Like, that's what I say, like a Meryl Streep thing, you know.
She could hit a level of mean that I don't think I could even fathom. I couldn't even understand. If she...
Where she, with the big climax, when she laughs, when she swears at Beth, and then she starts laughing, and she's like, you should see your face, I'm joking. Oh, it's so cringe, because clearly you were not, and it just, and that's what makes this movie so good too, because there's a lot of cringe here. Like, it's like, yeah, and it makes you, it's also a very, familiar, I think, to anyone who's ever been in high school, which is like a lot of us. People get like that, and chicks get like that, and people reason like that. And I mean, just her, like when she and Matt also gets nasty and talk about the positive cripple. What is her cousin that's in the wheelchair? I think she calls him the positive cripple or something. I mean, they just get like, they get into it. Like, it's
that guy made my life miserable because he was the positive guy and I was the negative one.
Exactly. Like, yeah, the two like disabled guys, the contrast. And that's what I love about this movie. The characters are always like contrasting each other. Again, I'm going back to that bar scene where what's the Nibbles band? What's the Nibbles
Confusion?
Band? Nibble Confusion. Where they're playing and she's looking at Beth behind the drums and doing backup vocals, and Beth is just like, she's shining. She is joy personified. And Mavis is like her face. Like, is it hate? Is it, it's jealousy. It's like, it's all the bad stuff just dripping from Mavis's face as she's watching Beth the opposite, like having all these like genuine joyful feelings, and Mavis being like, is it even possible for her to feel that at all, you know? I love it. There's all these contrasting things happening between the characters all the time. It's great scene work also. Again, like, I think as a storyteller and especially as a filmmaker, a lot of tricks and stuff you can actually pick out from this movie specifically. And how to do scene work, how to like put the meat on those characters, how to keep them intrigued, not say too much, but not say too little. Like, I think, yeah, this is, if I taught filmmaking or like script writing, even I would probably use this movie as a example, and also be able to watch it again.
And 90
and again,
minutes
again.
Too. 90 minutes.
Love it. No. This is one of my favorite Hangout movies. Like, I've watched this probably half a dozen times. I love this movie.
You know, that's a great point. This is a Hangout movie because no real life... So, the way I gauge a Hangout movie is something like, no real life lessons are learned. people get over things pretty quickly.
Exactly.
It is a good hangout picture. And also too, I just want to get your thoughts about Buddy, Patrick Wilson. So I'm from St. Pete, so is Patrick Wilson. So I remember when he got big and Alamo and Phantom of the Opera was a huge deal in St. Petersburg. We're like, yeah, local boy. But what did you think about Buddy? I mean, I wouldn't call him a total egg in Arrested Development sense. He's just he just seems like a super chill dude.
Who, so normal.
Yeah. And like, I think he's more of an ideal to her, I guess, than an actual.
Absolutely. Like, she wants to go back to this idea of, she has an idea that things were better, like, back then with Buddy and when she was younger, and she wants to, like, turn back the clock. I think it's fairly obvious when, you know, when she meets up with him for the first time in that bar, and he's standing at the bar, and they show her looking at him, kind of swooning over him, and the shot we see of him, like this supposed to be this like slow-mo from top, bottom to top, like slow-mo sexy shots. But then it's just him standing there. Like, it's not really this hot guy we're seeing now with the camera like panning up. It's just him looking so normal. Like, he looks like every man. So it's definitely, her issues and imagination and all of what's going on in the head, in the very interesting head of Mavis Carey, projected onto Buddy, who was her first. And then that little connection that they do have that shows like she's got some issues to work through, to get over and stuff. Well, not to get over, but like to deal with. He's so normal, dude. He's like every man.
There is some curiosity, I guess, too, on his point, though, because they do send the email. He does meet her for drinks. It's I like that,
he's
too.
He's very nice, but yeah. I think he's like a little bit ignorant.
Yeah.
I think, like, Beth is definitely the smart one between the two of them.
Yeah, he just works with his dad. We have lunches. We eat hoagies and pizza. Like, that's his big monologue when they meet. That's, like, his speech. Yeah, we eat pizza and hoagies.
He's super normal.
Oh, yeah. And he doesn't know she has it, because he thinks she's still married when he first sees her. Oh, okay. Yeah, he does. He's like, oh, yeah, what happened with you and Hal or Sam? She's like, yeah, we're broke up. He's like, oof.
Yes, that's right.
I just remember that, because then I think that makes him a little more trusting, because he's like, oh, she's back in town. She's still married to yada yada. So I'm going to go meet her for a drink. But yeah, I like that character too. I like that he's not a total buffoon. And I like that he's not a total, like Bradley Cooper from Wedding Crashers. He's just a kind of a chill dude. Works with his dad, gets some hoagies, likes his kid, supports his wife at shows, gets her drum kits. Like, he's clearly supportive. And then he's like, oh, I just like the openness between them. He told her. I bet you that night when she came home, he's like, listen, Mavis kissed me. This is weird. Like, and I guess Reeser is the one who wants her back, which is, do you think that's naive on her part? Is she trying to help? I mean, is that hitting the hornet's nest? I mean, I guess it did, but I guess they sort of miscalibrated her, I guess.
Yeah. Anyways. I don't know, actually. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting that she felt sorry for her. So I guess I probably thought, like, in a big group setting, it wouldn't hurt, and maybe it would be good for Mavis to be around other people instead of just being alone. And probably arguably Beth, wouldn't have wanted, like, Mavis to be the only one left out, because that would just make Beth look mean, you know? Like, it's a lot of politics. With girls, let me tell you.
How do you think the party went after Mavis left? What do you think was do you think everyone dispersed? Do you think they were able to rally and have a good time? What do you think was the aftermath of that party?
Gosh, I mean, yeah, like, watching it again for the pod now, I was also like, shame. Beth actually looks like she just wants to go and take a nap now. Like, that was just the most depressing thing that just happened. While she's like, trying to be so nice and also just keeping everything together. I guess I wouldn't be surprised if some people got drunk, actually. because like when weird stuff happens at events like that, then weird stuff tends to keep on happening, you know? So yeah, I don't know if they would all be as wise as to disperse and just go home. That would be very adult and very responsible. And I just don't think 30 people will all be that responsible. So.
And her parents, too, they did not listen to her, did they? They still kept the photos up.
Oh,
they liked
man.
The tiramisu.
Right? Like, who does that? Why would you? And also, it's one thing to keep the photo up because you like the photo of your daughter with her ex-husband. But then when your daughter asks you after the divorce, please take it down. I mean, that's when you comply, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jeez.
Was he just, do you think, I guess if we're reading into this, they think he was a good guy. They liked him a lot. And then they just didn't really get her back because it was like her fault. But that's, because if they hated him, they would have taken it down.
I kind of, like, I've wondered if there were more scenes between her and her parents, potentially, and they maybe cut some, or if was it only always just that one dinner scene? Because it's interesting, I would love to know the dynamics more there, because for me, I mean, it showed that, like, okay, well, this is where Mavis' stunted, like, emotional responses comes from, because her parents aren't really, like, majoring in that department.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't. Everything's just like, it's kind of like they just make decisions to keep the peace and not rock the boat, but it never really feels super sincere, and it kind of, the reasoning doesn't always make sense. So there's a lot of avoidance is what there is. And usually, yeah, it's because people don't know how to deal with it otherwise, or like, you know,
yeah, that's
get
true.
All emotional.
And they would lose a battle with Mavis if they tried to go head to head with her, clearly. So that'd be.
I keep wondering what was teenage years like in that house. Like, I mean, I think she just like railroaded there, right? I mean, she walked all over them probably as a teenager. I think she was out of control.
Mm-hmm. No,
she
I
was
agree.
Like, this is what's happening. And they were like, okay.
And her room is still the same. She still has something up from when she was 17, which her parents have kept. Which is another, or maybe that was the good times for them. Maybe she was normal then. Not normal, but for no one's normal. But you know, there's a lot of good little production design. Also, I want to give props to the when she fed her dog. There's 5 empty dog food things out there. So I like that she's responsible enough to feed her dog. She's just
but
not
then
responsible
she
enough
kind of
to clean
forgets
up.
To bring him back in.
Oh, yeah. Because
he's like standing outside yapping. And
oh, man.
He's in.
Mavis.
But that poor dog.
But it's cool, though, as a writer watching this. I mean, I've never ghost written novels before. But it's kind of cool because her name's not even on the cover. Like the book. I love how bratty she is. But that guy's kind of a brat to her, though, right? Because. She goes
listen, Bookman, I mean, also, Bookman knows too much. Bookman is actually annoying, okay? I'm kind of siding with her there. Whatever, Bookman, why wouldn't you just let her sign a book? What is, like, the like worst thing that can happen? 1 or 2 books, humor her. It's 2 books you can't send back. 2 of the piles and piles on the table anyway. He's just like, no, you can't, because then it's going to be, like, we can't send them back.
That's a great point
Shut
you make.
Shut up, Bookman!
Do you think that's the most inorganic dialogue sequence because of the amount of dialogue and, like, you know, these don't sell. The book thing is over. We're going to turn them back. It's very – it might be the most on the nose.
Yeah, it's probably the most. Yeah, it's probably the most forced also and kind of doesn't even make sense in a way. Like, why would that guy know so much about these books anyway? Like, I don't know. It's just – that's probably like the one where we could have less, but it was funny. It was funny. It's always a funny scene.
It would have been better if he knew who she was, right? He's like, oh, okay, you're from here. You wrote these books. And then she tries to sign it. He's like, no. I don't know. Just something.
Yeah, or maybe like, you know, she wants like to like sign the book and he's like, no, you can't. But hey, you want to go on a date? And like, she gets her like thing in. Or I don't know. You know, that could have maybe been fun. Like, turn it around.
Was it was the book series popular, though? Because it looked like there was a lot on the table. I mean, normally when book series finish, it doesn't mean that all the books go on clearance, because people are still clearly buying Harry Potter. People are still buying Lord of the Rings. People are still buying Goosebumps. So is that, did it just sort of diminish
in
quality?
And like, how many of the books did they order? Because that's a lot of books on the table. I mean, I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I guess it's hard to know, like, how many editions there are also.
Oh, Waverly Prep 3.5 and 4.5 prequels, the middle school like, years.
Now with, like, graphic novel cover, anime cover, I don't know.
And I do like that Kendall in that book series is so popular that didn't she become homecoming queen of a school that she didn't even go to?
A neighboring school. Okay, so I love the whole, like, I mean, that young adult book sounds hysterical. It's so over the top. It's so... And I love that, you know, they use that as her little narration throughout and kind of like her, you know, inner thoughts that she's spilling out there because, oh my gosh, yeah, she became homecoming queen of a school she doesn't even go to. Oh, incredible. Like, she's just amazing. And nobody will ever know how difficult it is to be so popular and so pretty. And that's also the thing, like, she does the whole... so pretty, and it's not her fault she's so pretty, but then while that narration is happening, we see her like curling her wig that's not her hair to like put on and doing all the makeup and like it's a nice like little details that they use with the narration. I yeah. love the fact that the ghostwriter thing, I thought that was pretty cool. Like, it's not her, but she writes the books. Like, she's the writer. But it's not her. What your name's not on the cover.
And I love the name of the titles, too. Reitman had Diablo Cody just write 10 titles and send it. And I guess 40 minutes later, he got really weird titles for the books. So I forget which one she was looking at. But it did not sound like a really appetizing book, the title of it. It just makes me happy. And I also love, too, how she reverts back to the teenage years when she's with her parents, which I think happens a lot in these movies. But she puts the coat back on and then she's just like,
and
Mom.
In real life, go with your friends to their parents' house and see your friends like going back to those, like, yeah, you're just in Mom and Dad's house. I love it.
I think the only thing that really dates this movie. It doesn't really, but I think the Wii is the only thing that maybe dates it. What do you think? Her workout? Other than that, this movie is just as relevant today as, I mean, it's only 10, 11 years ago, but I don't know. But she still works out too. Like, there's a lot of interesting facets about this character's naughty. I've said that, you know, I guess you could do a drinking game of, you know, you could eat a, you know, something from Kentucky Taco Bell Pizza Hut every time I say that she's really good. But I like
or drink some Star Wars whiskey.
Oh, that would be horrible.
Most easily.
You know what's nuts? He had that in his garage for 8 years in a mini barrel, just aging.
Right.
That he made and coopered the barrel. And it's just watching her chug it. And her being a brat and just chugging it. And she knew it pissed him off. Because I'm a big fan of whiskey. And so sometimes I have people over and they're like, I just chug it. And you're like, whoa! So yeah, just watching her chug that whiskey and have no bring some Star Wars, but like just having no regard for him. And she steamrolls him too. Like, remember when he says, you know, she's like showing herself to him, but then he's like, yeah, guys like me are meant to love you. Like, he becomes her sort of puppy dog at that scene.
Yeah.
And then she leaves him. Same arm motion as the other guy, which is interesting. They just kind of trap her there. But it's Oswald's really good. He did a lot of, like you said, Reitman said that he learned how to walk. He learned how to make toys. He learned about whiskey. Like, he did so they did readings at Reitman's house. Reitman's famous for doing readings at his home. And I guess the people who did the first couple readings were Patton Oswalt and Colette Wolfe. And then eventually they got hired when they did one with a reading with Charlize. And I guess they all had so much chemistry. They were just helping out with the readings, but then they got hired for the roles, which I thought was pretty cool. Yeah. But the sister's good too. Megan was watching it, and Colette Wolfe as Sandra, she's so used to her from Hot Tub Time Machine.
Yeah.
And she's like, it's weird seeing her like this, because in Hot Tub Time Machine, she's kind of a maniac, and I love it. So I kind of miss, what is she doing nowadays? I haven't seen her around much. But I like her a lot in this movie. She's just very earnest. And then she gets burned. That burn she gets hit with. Oh, she was also in Observe and Report. Have you watched that movie?
I did. I can't remember it, though.
Yeah, when
I watched it and I immediately forgot about it.
Seth Rogen is a bipolar
was one of
cop.
Those for me. Yeah.
People weren't ready for that.
Yeah, it wasn't really memorable for me at the time. But yeah, no, I love Colette. I also, what I love about her character, though, is when Charlize, like, when she goes to the house and Colette opens the door and she does that whole, don't you remember me? That whole thing that always happens, you know, when, like, the popular kids from school and they meet the other kids that they can't remember or whatever. But I love it because Colette's like, yeah, what did she say? She had to secretly put something, lemon squares or something in a locker,
mm-hmm.
some cookie thing or something. And I'm like, okay, but how is she supposed to remember you through that? Like, I thought that was very clever because that was subverting the whole trope of a popular girl doesn't remember you. Plus, we already did that earlier in the movie when mm-hmm. she did that with Matt. So then with his sister, it's like, don't you remember me? But then, yeah, how would she remember you for secretly putting something in her locker for the principal? Like, it wasn't even, like, coming from her. The school told, I can't remember that exactly now, but it was this weird thing. Like, I thought that was pretty funny. Like, it's subverting the joke a little.
You don't remember me because I secretly put your stuff in there? Oh, yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, right? I like, when I watched it again, I laughed at that bit specifically because I'm like, yeah, you see, some people also, they'll be like, why don't you remember me? And it's like, well, why would you? Because, you know, it's funny how you think you should be significant to someone else. But then when you didn't have a relationship, then what claim do you really now have for being remembered? You know, I like that little bit. It makes you think about it differently. It's, again, adding another layer to stupid high school.
What did you think about Mavis watching so much reality television? They put a big...
Oh, yeah, daytime talk shows. Like, that's what she does. She gets up, get over her hangover, writes a little, and then watch daytime TV.
I guess, do you think it's passive watching when you watch daytime TV? You don't really... It's probably you can go in and out of it.
I read it. I did a thing 2 years ago about like our viewing habits. So I did some research on like interesting stuff that they've done, like, you know, researching viewing habits and like people prone to certain things. And like reality shows and stuff. It's a lot like of you know, more people that don't really like get out much, don't really have like big social circles, more introverted type of people. So like, I think that was just like, yeah, Mavis not really having a life outside of writing. So that's what she does, you know, and then she goes and drink and she hooks up with a random dude. She doesn't even go drinking with friends. She's only got Vicky. I'm judging Vicky too hard. Sorry, Vicky.
Think she's afraid of Mavis, though. I think she just...
Vicky needs to backbone it a little. Come on, yeah. Vicky. I mean, you're also not helping or being complicit. So, you know, come on, girl.
Do you think Mavis does that on purpose, though? Kind of hanging out with those types that she can steamroll?
Probably. Like, narcissists do that. They surround themselves with people they know they can't control. Like, because that's the thing with narcissists, they need to feel like they're in control. If they don't, yikes, it gets bad. They freak out, like the climax, for instance. And I think that's also a thing. Like, you know, we talk about narcissism and the whole thing, and like society in general has started talking about those type of things more. But like, I think a lot of times people forget that it's also just like sad people with issues. Like, it's very difficult to be around them because they do tend to disregard everyone else. But they're also sad people, like, and, you know, with sad lives and stuff. I think, yeah, there's still humanity in there, even if it's just for the best of the world. But, yeah, I don't know.
Such a good movie.
It's so good. I love it.
I'm telling you, I said in the beginning of the episode, I'm saying it again. This, I remember watching this and just, it's so rare that you and I, or at least, you know, I can't speak for you, but for me, when I watch something and I just feel like I haven't seen it before. And
yeah,
I think, listen, that's not me that's not me hating on sequels or reboots or prequels, because they've existed since cinema existed. So I've accepted that. So I'm not really saying that, but like, when I see something that I feel I've never witnessed as a character on screen, and that's why I think this movie's so special to me, because I mean, I don't have a poster on my wall, but I just remember the feeling I had watching it, just thinking, this is an original, this is something, it's cool that and it kept subverting expectations. And I think I went into it thinking a little bit that was going to be sort of like a Diablo Cody-esque movie, and it wasn't that at all. So it was just such a pleasant experience for me to watch. And also, P-Dub is in it. I'm a big Patrick Wilson fan, so that's cool.
That makes me happy. Of course.
But yeah, no, I mean, any other final thoughts about this movie? Any other things that we haven't talked about yet? Her ringer t-shirts?
Most. I love like her wardrobe in general. I love the little outfit she chooses for the big party.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
She looks like total like church lady with I'm coming with my basket of biscuits.
And a hair bun and barf bags. And just
amazing.
And then she looked like the rocker that one time. And then she, in the beginning when they met at the bar, she had the dress. Like, she has disguises, I guess, that she tries to adapt. Yeah.
That she tries to fit in, exactly. Like, because she doesn't, it's almost like she doesn't really know how else to be. Like, she doesn't have this authentic personality almost. Like, and it's like she knows it. So I think it was funny, like, that she's a ghostwriter too, you know?
Oh,
it
fits.
It's all part of it, you know? Yeah, exactly. Like, and she'll adapt to, okay, I'm going to a rock concert, so I'm going to dress like a rock star. Or I'm going to, like, this, you know, baby was born, like, after birth, baby shower, I guess, post-baby shower vibe, whatever. And, like, okay, I'm going to dress like a church lady. Or she has these ideas of, even just, I love how she... Well, the first time she talks to Buddy over the phone is when she's outside of the bar, and he calls her, she answers, and her voice changes immediately. Charlize is so freaking good in this. Her voice changes immediately. Like, I mean, when she meets him in the bar, that's a whole thing. Like, you know, her face and everything changes. But even just with the phone call, she's like, hey, Buddy. Like, it immediately goes up pitch a bit higher. It's just so great. Like, and then, when she goes to her mom and dad and the way she talks to them, it's...
And her body language is so frumped over in her chair. It makes me happy. And I love when she's like, hey, how about 8? And he's like, yeah, how about 6?
Perfect.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, she immediately adapts to that.
Immediately adapts, it's... And that's sad. That's why it's a tragic comedy.
It is, and it... But it's not, I don't think this movie's ever making fun of her. It's such a, look at the promotional materials.
You feel for her. You feel like Beth. Well, I feel like Beth. Like, she's sad, and you kind of want to help her. Like,
because
she's
so
sad.
But I hate the posters, too. It's like, everyone gets old, not everyone grows up. That's the tagline. And Charlize Theron wearing her Hello Kitty shirt, looking sassy. It's not that at all. is she stuck? Like, I don't think she's stuck in Arrested Development. I just think she is not well.
I think in her, like, in a mental, you know, her mental state and her, like, her mental prison, she's stuck. Like, that's what we're seeing. Like, you know, her wanting to go back, she's regressing. So, you know, like, yeah. But I mean, it's a moment. It's this little moment. That's why I'm like, I like to wonder what happened then. Like, I would have loved a young adult sequel. Speaking of sequels and stuff, like, where's my young adult sequel?
Oh, that'd be amazing. I would watch that.
What's Mavis doing now? Diablo Cody, write young adult 2. Charlize would kill it. Like,
oh, get totally.
Yes!
One final thought. When she's at Macy's, and that shot of her walking to Macy's, Reitman said the shot made no sense. She would never park that far away, but he just liked the shot, so he filmed it. But they, when she is so, she knows what she's doing with that woman. Like, she's playing the Marc Jacobs thing. She knows it's not there. Like, what's her end game there? Because there's no one really to put on a front. Is that the real her? Is that? Like, what is she?
Yeah, that's the narcissist. She just wants to get a rouse out of that woman, I swear. Like, but also feel superior because I think for her to even be in this, like, shop, you know, is like a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So she needs to feel superior to this lady that's super nice and treating her like an equal. And she's like, we'll be having none of that today.
And then, yeah, but his wife hasn't seen me. I was like, oh.
Oh, why? I mean.
So that's her. Would you say that's her? Like, that's.
That's her. That's, I think that is a knee-jerk reaction. That is a very Mavis thing to do. Yes.
Wow.
Unfortunately.
What a movie.
That's the not pretty side of Mavis. But yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, we can go on about this character. It's a character study, really. Mavis Gary is one of the most interesting film characters of all time. There, I said it.
I agree. Because the reason I agree so quickly with you, and I was nodding when you said it, is I can't think of other ones like her.
Yeah, exactly. She is so unique. She's so authentic in her non-authentic way.
Is that a lack
of... brilliant.
Is that like a lack of screenwriter talent? I guess not every basketball player scores 100 points a game. Like, that's probably happened 3 times ever. So clearly you can't create iconic characters every time you go out and write a movie. So I guess we can't expect that. But yeah, this is a good one.
It's a lot of other things too. I'm telling you, there's a lot of Mavis Garys lying on the floor because it was rejected for a myriad of reasons, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's true.
Because, but also this movie was polarizing, you know? Not everyone likes young adults, and not everyone is going to like Mavis. And I think the point is not whether you like her or not, though. That's not really the point. Mm-hmm. Like, the movie isn't saying you should like her. The movie is just saying you should see her, I think.
Put that on the Blu-ray. Jeez Louise. That's a good quote. I like that.
Thank you. Thank you. Pay me all the money.
I want to see that. So between young adult in 2011 and Goon in 2011, those are two of my favorite movie characters ever. Doug Glatt in Goon, played by Sean William Scott. He's the nicest guy on the planet, but he can beat people up. It's such a nice – I love him in that movie. So yeah, 2011 produced 2 all-timers for me. Wait, when did The Raid come out? If The Raid came out, then that's like my favorite action character ever.
Well, female movies, Bridesmaids came out, and I love Kristen Wiig's character in Bridesmaids. I love, love her character. She was also, like, very refreshing with, like, commitment stuff and weird, and, like, yeah, career-driven stuff also weird. And I love Annie. 2011 was an interesting year, Mark.
Yeah, and The Raid came out. Eco UA. Ha ha.
Oh, your favorite.
Yeah. And yeah, no, you're right. And also Melissa McCarthy in Bridesmaids, where she actually is really rich. And yes. She actually knew that guy was a cop. Like, there's
just like everyone in Bridesmaids.
Yeah, exactly.
So good.
And the raccoons who eat the cake. That thing always makes me laugh. I love that bit. But you know what? If I had to take 2011 characters, I would do that. If I had to pick characters I love. Because, yeah, There it is. Oh, Fright Night. I like that movie. The remake. Hey, Shark Night, Jet Skis. Scream 4. You got Kirby in there.
Scream 4, Kirby, exactly.
I'm just reading movies. Oh, Warrior,
just
Drive.
Just saw that.
Oh, my goodness. The 2011 has some strong characters. I'm stealing
Paul?
That. I'm taking it. I'm
Paul?
Taking it. You're next.
The coolest alien.
Oh, yeah.
The coolest alien in Paul.
And what about Aaron from
You're Next? Yes. Yes.
Look at this year.
We should have done like a character like thingy.
All right, let's do it real
Maybe
quick.
Maybe we'll do this afterwards.
Let's do it real
we
quick.
We can do it afterwards. And
okay.
We can just put it on social.
Oh, I like that.
Now, these are too many. Oh, it's too many characters, dude.
This is awesome. I think we're on
to
something.
It's actually going to be too difficult. Maybe we just thought of a new tournament thing.
What's this?
Know.
All right, we'll semi-five. Yeah. I'll promote the episode with a 2011 character thing.
Okay, let's do that. Give me some time after the pod.
Oh, they introduced Darcy from Thor. She's great.
Oh yeah, Darcy, of course.
The wolves from Grey, the Grey. All right.
I see many. Okay.
Well,
yeah.
Hey, do you want to promote? You're on Twitter. Do you want to tell people about your Twitter account before we get out of here?
Yeah. No, you guys can just check me out on Twitter. That's it for today, Mark.
Right.
2022 is crazy and exciting, people. So yeah, strap in and here we go.
Oh, and Take okay. Shelter was 2011.
Oh, well. I mean,
silence. I'm looking at the years. All right. Well, thank you for joining us. So for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, and for Zanani Boetes, this is Movie Films and Flicks. We'll see you next week.